My name is Hallie Nipp. I'm a graduate student working with Special Collections and Archives at Clemson University. I'm here today, June 16th, 2023, with Dr. Joe Turner. Today we'll be discussing the formation of Clemson's Computer Science Department. Dr. Turner, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes, you do.
Thank you. So just to start us off, can you tell me how you came to Clemson in the first place?
Okay, well, let's see. That was almost 50 years ago, so I was finishing my PhD in computer science at the University of Maryland and interviewing various places for an academic job. I had taught at a college in Georgia for 6 years, actually, before I went back for my PhD at Maryland. And so I knew I wanted an academic job, at least preferably. And I had interviewed at various places. And actually, my wife at the time thought that Clemson was the one that she would pick. And I was impressed. There was no computer science program then. There were not a whole lot of computer science programs in the U.S. That was in 1975, and the 70s was the time that many new computer science programs were being formed around the country. Computer science was basically just catching on as an academic discipline. So I liked Clemson, and I thought it was interesting what they were trying to do here. The program was in the Department of Mathematical Sciences. There was an option. The math sciences program at the time had about four options in various areas, possibly outside the realm of what would normally be considered certainly pure mathematics. So it was a very, very applications-oriented math department, and they had a nice option in computer science. It wasn't quite what you call a degree program. But so anyway, I came and accepted the position here. And then interest in having a program in computer science or something with more computer science in it than what was in the math department, that grew, and so eventually it was decided to form a computer science department.
Okay. So before Georgia, where did you go to college and grad school?
I went to Georgia Tech. I started at Georgia Tech in 1957. And I graduated with a bachelor's degree and went in the Army for a year. And then went back to Georgia Tech for a master's degree in mathematics. And then after that, I went to accepted a position at West Georgia College. It was college then. It's now university, West Georgia University. And spent 6 years there, and I had had a summer internship basically at IBM the year before I graduated from Georgia Tech, and I became interested in computing at that time. And then at West Georgia College, I also ended up working part-time in the computer center and got more interested in computing.
So are you from Georgia?
No, I'm from Florida. I grew up in Florida.
Okay.
Florida native.
So what drew you to math at first?
Well, when I started Georgia Tech, I didn't, like most, I think many college students, I didn't know what I really wanted to do. So I had to pick something, and I picked electrical engineering. Actually, I thought I might want to do nuclear engineering, but there was no undergraduate program. So I just picked electrical engineering. But then I found that I was enjoying the math courses more than the introductory electrical engineering courses that I was taking. And so I changed to mathematics, and just because I enjoyed it.
Fair enough. So once you were at Clemson, how did the conversation come up that instead of just a like an attachment to the math degree, that computer science a separate department?
Well, that's a good question. You're asking me to remember things that were 45 or 50 years ago. Just generally, I think it was related to the fact that the interest in computer science nationally was growing quite rapidly, and there were curriculum recommendations that were put out by one of the larger and more important computing societies. And then there were some people on campus that were also interested in having more courses, more intensive education in computer science available. There were a couple of those. One was the person who was the head of the computer center at the time, and another was a person who was also technically teaching in the math science option, but he was working in what was then called DAPS, the Division of Application Programming or Services, I think, something like that. So it just sort of grew. The interest grew. I think there was interest at some high levels of the administration, the dean of the graduate school, and even the president became interested in developing computer science more than what it had been in the math science option.
Okay, so you mentioned that computer science was fairly new at the time, and there weren't a lot of programs. So how did you and your colleagues go about building a bachelor's degree?
Well, as I mentioned, there were some curriculum recommendations that had been developed and published by one of the leading computing societies, and that was a good that was a good pattern to start with. And we all had degrees in computer science, usually graduate degrees, and so we had some feel for the kind of courses that were needed, and we were teaching a good many real computer science courses as a part of the option in mathematics.
Okay, that makes sense. So I know you did some work with the Computer Sciences Accreditation Board. Is that what you were referencing that put out the curriculum recommendations?
No. The organization that put out the curriculum recommendations was ACM, okay. Which originally stood for Association for Computing Machinery, but that was started way back in the very beginning, and it really has grown more into the computer science orientation, which is more of a software and hardware orientation. So the ACM had published these recommendations for what a undergraduate curriculum in computer science should be. And initially it was probably a little more on the theoretical side than a lot of people thought was needed. And some later recommendations came out that were a lot closer to what we tried to implement initially.
Okay. Can you tell me about some of the work you did with the Accreditation Board?
The Accreditation Board, well, it didn't, came along much later. Actually, the ACM was quite, was one of the the organizers or one of the organizers of the accreditation board. And from the beginning, it was patterned a lot after long-standing accreditation organization for engineering programs called ABET, which initially is, and the incorporated name is the Accreditation Board for Engineering and Technology, ABET. And the computer science accreditation was patterned generally organization-wise after what ABET did. But that started in 1986 or 87 was the first year for accreditation by the Computing Sciences Accreditation Commission of the Computing Sciences Accreditation Board.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, that organization, just a few years later, I guess 12 or 14 years later, around 2000, actually merged with ABET and became a commission, the Computing Commission of ABET.
That's interesting. So you've mentioned this a couple times. We're talking about things that happened 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of looking back, what are some of the major changes that you think have affected computer science overall? Like, I know there's a lot, but if you were to pick a couple that you would say are kind of landmark changes in the field.
In the field itself or the program here at Clemson?
The field itself.
Oh, well, there's so many. I mean, they go back to the 60s and earlier, really. I suppose it depends a little bit on from whose perspective, and one of the biggest things I think that has affected certainly education, along with a lot of other things, is the miniaturization. Back in, even when I came here, you did everything by terminals connected to a mainframe,
mm-hmm.
in that sense, and you had to go to a room that had the terminals where you could have access to the computer, and the move toward desktop computers, for example, still didn't happen in a big way until mid-80s, probably. So a lot of our early work in computing and teaching computing was still sort of oriented toward a terminal, not a computer, connected remotely to a big computer, like the computer center here.
Right.
Yeah, and there were no cell phones then. There were just handheld calculators, if you want to think about personal computing type devices. But they were just that. They were just calculators.
Right.
So the move toward that eventually morphed into, produced or turned into the phones, the cell phones that we have today, which are little computers, basically. And even before that, getting the personal computers started coming in seriously probably around 1980, so not too long after. But we didn't, for example, have personal computers available to the faculty until it was actually the latter part of the 80s. Yeah. So having that kind of access, and then eventually the ability to have that access at home, so you didn't have to come back to the office every night to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are very big changes that affected the field. The advancement of software, the development of guidelines, principles, engineering approaches, if you will, which is basically what they were, to developing computer software. It was a big change that started affecting a lot of things.
How do you think those overall changes affected the actual computer science department here?
Well, it affected the way we teach, the way that you, things that you could expect students to be able to do eventually, because certainly after laptop computers came in and all the students had laptop, and the universities started requiring students, and especially in certain programs, to have their own laptop. And that gave the students, constant access to the computing facilities, abilities that they needed, which basically changed the way we taught and what we could expect of students and what students could achieve, really.
So from a faculty standpoint, and you were the chair of the department for a while, all these changes are happening fairly quickly from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And can you speak on, making sure your curriculum is staying relevant?
Yeah, it was a constant thing. I mean, I forget exactly, but at one point we were updating the curriculum, I think every year, certainly at least every 2 years, and with making pretty significant changes, because the field was changing so fast. The communication aspect of computing, not just terminals, but computers talking to other computers. All of that was developing networks. And so keeping up with all of that, in addition to the capabilities and the organization of computers and what aspects were due to miniaturization and the use of your cell phone as a computer, for example. All of these things happened, and they all required curriculum changes to address and try to keep up with everything.
Not just the curriculum itself, but the faculty teaching the curriculum. I mean, how do you make sure that your faculty is...
Good question, yeah.
...staying up to date?
Well, faculty are motivated to do that. We had good faculty, and we had faculty who were interested in keeping up to date. And so you attend conferences, and you read, and try to use the latest textbooks. Just the same thing faculty members always do. It just sort of happened a little faster, or a lot faster, in computing. So... any technical area, the technology is advancing, new discoveries coming in. I mean, even in non-computing fields in the sciences, like biology has been completely different today, much because of the ability of computers to do a lot of things that are helpful. But that's true in all the sciences, and certainly engineering as well. They have changed very rapidly.
Yeah, for sure.
But computing was probably changing faster earlier.
Yeah.
Because it was all that advancement in computing that made a lot of the capabilities in the that they can do in the sciences and engineering today.
Yeah, I just know reading the history of computer science and computing seems like from the 70s to the mid-90s, just things are happening constantly and rapidly.
Yeah.
And just seems really interesting to be on the education side of things as those things are going on.
It's true, but it's arguably arguably the case that it's changing just as rapidly today as it was in up to the mid 90s. So it didn't stop there.
Fair enough.
there was a time, sort of, probably in the 90s, when at least the curriculum wasn't changing every year. Things were stable enough so that the advancements could be incorporated into existing courses without having to invent new courses, and that was that helped a lot as far as the amount of work to keep the curriculum relevant. But even, I mean, if you look today, for example, I mean, look at what artificial intelligence is doing. And artificial intelligence has been around a long time. Certainly in the 70s, there was a lot of effort and a lot of work, and the products were didn't come quite as quickly as a lot of people predicted, but they're hard problems, and a lot of people worked very, very hard all through the 80s to get to the point even where probably the first noticeable breakthrough was speech recognition. And speech translation. Those were fairly successful early on, but there was still nothing like what we finally gotten to the point with, like ChatGPT or mm-hmm. those kind of large language models, which are pretty astounding.
What do you have an opinion on ChatGPT and related programs?
Not really, because I haven't even gotten around to using it, and I'm so technically out of date that I don't have much insight. I never took a course, a kind of rudimentary course in artificial intelligence. So I know some of the principles, and actually we were incorporating some of the very basic ideas into some of our very low-level courses in computer science in the 80s. So, you know, have some feel for what meant by machine learning. Mm-hmm. But machine learning, actually, that term, I think, came along after artificial intelligence. The term artificial intelligence has been around quite a while. And, but the successes in that have come about in the last just few years have been really quite amazing. It's an exponential growth in ability and successes, and as with an exponential curve, there is what's called the knee of the curve, where suddenly it's just going up and up, and then it just suddenly just catches on and goes almost straight up, and the successes, the changes and improvements and accomplishments happen so quickly once it really gets started on the exponential growth part of the curve.
What would you say to people who are cautious or even scared of that growth?
Well, I think a lot of the issues that have been raised by some very bright people are quite real, quite possible. I mean, we don't know. We do know a lot of things. We know that a lot of accomplishments or discoveries, achievements, accomplishments in computing have been used in ways that were never envisioned for them, just like really everything else. I mean, everything from any scientific accomplishment, even drugs, for example. Look how people, the drugs are produced to solve or one problem, that is cure one disease or symptoms, and it turns out later on to be used in many different ways, not all of them good. Some of them are in fact are very harmful in the long run. So people will use things in a way that occurs to them, which is not always the way that the inventors or the creators envisioned that it would be used. So the same thing is going to be true and has already been true with, you already have the ChatGPT or something similar to that being used for illegal purposes or just a smart spam, for example.
So kind of going back to your own work, can you tell me about some work you've done with specific computer science societies and groups?
Okay, well, certainly, I mean, I've already mentioned ACM. I was pretty active in ACM. I was the chair of the ACM Education Board, which basically coordinates and oversees all of the educational activities, everything from producing curriculum recommendations to developing different kinds of different levels of computing, everything from K-12 to two-year colleges to universities and PhD programs and accreditation of the programs. So I was the chair of the education board and involved in some of the curriculum development curriculum recommendations, the development of those. And I was treasurer of ACM and a vice president of ACM. So I was very active. And I became very active in with the accreditation activities as well.
I was reading some old Tiger newspapers when the department received their accreditation.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And was talking about the article was talking about how, you know, there were so many computer science programs popping up and there wasn't really any coherent idea to them, but that when Clemson got accredited, it was the first round, no changes. So I was, you know, impressed and pleased when I read about that. I was like, all right, we're doing something correct, doing something right. But yeah, do you remember that period when a lot of universities were creating computer science programs that weren't necessarily what they should have been? And can you speak on that?
Yeah, sure. There were kind of two sides to that. Most reputable universities, reputable might be a little too strong a word, but most institutions named universities, let's say, were creating computer science programs, and they were they were decent programs. I mean, they were legitimate academic programs. Many of them were on a very theoretical side, which was one good reason for having accreditation, because